Stuff said every day, 3:45 to 4 a.m. We'll practice all year. By the time it really counts, we'll get it right. Okay, yes. Yeah, so we are recording this. So it's intended to be a short class. All right. Go ahead. Go for it. It's intended to be a short class. Close the door, please. Thank you. And I'm hoping to have some time at the end for questions and answers. Why not? I'll release questions. I don't know what we'll have with the answers. We'll see. Before we get going, I want to, first of all, thank you for coming. It's a big honor to have a chance to learn with the Bogrim, or if you prefer Latin, because you're more toward the modern than the alumni, and the Shanabet, who will be our future alumni, and who are really the bridge between the past, the present, the future, whatever it is. And I also want to take just a moment to say thank you very much, publicly acknowledge the Cohen family from Atlanta, Georgia, for sponsoring this this class in honor of the Shanabet and the alumni. Did you know that? Well, now you do. Yeah, God bless your family. Okay, so this is not a joke, but most of the ideas that I'm about to share with you came from my wife this morning. It's true. Some of them are my own. The ones you don't like are mine. The ones that you really like, we'll give a credit to my wife. But I've decided to discuss. Come on in, please. This is a dating and marriage class in honor of the alumni and the Shanabet. And the Shanabet and the alumni. But I don't think we have enough chairs, so maybe.
All right.
Now is a good time, just while we're waiting for the chairs to arrive, to say your brachas. Go ahead. Open, pass around, make some brachas.
Rabbi, are you going to get the sender?
Don't be shy. No, I don't think so. If you want to get a chair, get a chair now. And Mr. Tepp, you'll be my time man at 3:35. Give me a little sign so I know to try to give about 5-10 minutes for what you call. All right. If it gets hot, just turn the thing off. One person, not 15.
Only 45
minutes. No, don't open windows. Just turn it off. You won't need it again up there. Okay, gentlemen. So I want to talk about a very important topic in marriage. One will be rash to say the most important, but certainly in many ways it's the beginning and the end of a successful marriage, and that's the concept of commitment. Commitment, I believe, is, I hope it's not dying, and I hope it's not going out of style, but it's pretty clear that the concept of commitment in marriage and relationships has been eroded. Right? And when we look back over the previous decades, it was pretty clear that the standard model for marriage was one for life. And divorce was the exception. And it was clear that when you went into the, whether you were Jewish or not Jewish, religious or not religious, when you made the decision to get hitched, whatever the term might be, the terms are all kind of commitment terms, right? Ball and chain, get hitched, tie the knot. They all have a message of finality. Because marriage was essentially, I love you so much, let's make this final, let's commit for life. And then, of course, sometimes things don't work out. And sometimes there was divorce, but that used to be the mute. That used to be the exception. Along comes modern society, which has undergone a lot of convulsions in the last few decades, especially since World War II. And divorce is no longer looked as with the same opprobrium that it used to be looked at. And no one gets married with the intention of getting divorced, but the fact is the numbers are there that more than one out of two marriages end in divorce. And I'm sure there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of the reasons, by the way, I apologize for yelling, I'm just trying to do it for the initial food-sounding noises that I'm trying to cover up for. One of the reasons that that has happened, I believe, is because of either a misunderstanding or simply a lack of commitment to the concept of commitment. And I want to share with you a few angles on commitment. One of them I think is brilliant. And I'm not just saying this to be cute, but it's from my wife this morning. And we're going to start it off with a... I use one of these to start it off with a English grammar lesson. I didn't know what my wife does for a profession.
He's an English teacher, right? He teaches Israelis English.
Should we do it for a long time? So she had the following insight. So I want to share it with you. You ready?
Okay. What's the difference between this and this? What I mean is, what part of speech?
That's right, get you ready. If you're not in college yet, I'm getting you ready. Ready for write compositions. Get ready, guys.
I run versus I am running.
Not in French, in English. I'm kidding, good.
One of them you're in the middle of doing it, one of them
you say. I want the name of the, you're already step two. Step one, what's the name of the part of speech
that this is in versus this is in the verb form?
Present progressive is the
better one. Wait, what second?
What? Passive versus active.
Passive versus, no. That's either I eat or I am eaten. And with run, there isn't. I'm run, like you run me into the ground. You could say that, right? That would be passive. So it's not passive-active. They're both active, but they're different active. What'd you say?
I think the right one's called present progressive. Is that right?
Okay, right. So, good. This is what's called... Who's in college here? College boy. This is called the... present simple. I run. Right? And this one over here is called the progressive. I am running. Good. And the progressive, of course... consists of the participle, which is running, right, with the verb to be. And it makes it into the progressive.
Right.
Now that we have that, what is the implication of the meaning between the difference between those two, what you were getting at before?
Whether you're in the middle of doing it or whether you're saying it, I generally do.
Okay, good. When I say I am running, I am describing what point in time?
Present,
that's it. I'm describing the present. This here is only what's going on right now. I'm sorry if this marker's not so great. When I say I run, then what am I saying?
Always.
Right, it's something that I've done before. Right, I might be doing it right now, I might not. But it's something that is an ongoing process with an implication for the future that what?
It's
going to continue. Right, good. So this is something that essentially describes both the past, the present, and has a very strong implication. I mean, in theory, I could break his leg today, and he won't be running tomorrow, right? Or he can give it up for bowling. But if he says, I run, he generally does it, he can kind of assume that unless things change, it's going to affect the future. Excellent. Okay. What a lot of us do... is a lot of us view our actions in the present, which makes sense. That's where we are now, and that's where we tend to focus. Right? And going a little bit along with the beautiful words of Rav David Miller this morning, who spoke so wonderfully about Rabbi Akiva and Yosef HaTzadik and Miriam and their ability to be in the present, but yet to always have an eye towards the future, Eizu Chacham HaRoeh Et Hanola. Right? And he actually sees right now that which is going to happen in the future. So, we tend to not do that, right? What do we tend to do? If we get angry with somebody, could be a spouse, could be a kid, could be whatever, somebody, friend, roommate, and they really upset us, and we yell at them, we scream at them. So if I stop you right in the middle, now of course, Shucksy would never do that. I shouldn't name names. This is going up on the website. If I stop this young man and say, wait a minute, what are you doing right now? Well, he would say, oh, I am yelling. Good. Is he telling me the truth? Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing, right? Good. The reality is, though, that the present simple is also true. And at the same time, when a person is yelling, then he yells. I am yelling. It's also true that I yell. And the person who's getting yelled at is not thinking, oh, he is yelling. He's thinking this guy yells. The wife who is listening to her husband, and the husband says something that, whatever, both of them know, honey, I'm going to be late because X, Y, Z. I'm so sorry I called, but, you know, something came up. And he's lying.
So he thinks, as he's talking to her,
last time I forgot to call. Oh, my gosh, I've hit this for 2 days. So a little white lie, right?
So he's thinking, I am lying.
She's listening, and she's no idiot. And she thinks about her husband. What does that do to the relationship? Not good, right? It's not good. Well, we tend to have a tendency to look at other people in the progressive. I'm sorry, in the present simple. That's what we tend to judge people. Right?
And therefore, if our spouse or relationship, whatever we're in, does something that we don't like, we tend to view it as that's who he is. Because he yells. He lies. Right?
You don't say... it's a slightly different piece of construct in speech, but it's the same idea. If you have a roommate who's driving you crazy, you don't say he is annoying me. You say he is annoying. And we kind of freeze the person in that, in the present. Right? Whereas when we look at ourselves, we're like, yeah, well, you know, I was upset. Da, 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 da. So I yelled. I'm upset right now, so I am yelling. That's not who I am, but that's what I'm doing. Now, who has the truth? Who's seeing this accurately?
The wife that's listening and hears her husband and thinks he lies.
Or is the husband accurate in saying, I'm lying. It's true. I'm lying. Who's accurate? What do you think? And if the first guy says both, then stand up for what you believe. Who's telling the truth? Who's got the better perception?
Progressive.
The progressive, when the husband says, I am lying, you're for the husbands, right? The wife's lying too, by the way. I'm sure it had to go both ways. Let's just assume, since I'm working with you guys, that you're the ones who need the muster, not her. So. Right. So, well, let me ask you like this. If it's the first time that I ever yell at my child, I ever yelled at my child, she gets so fed up. Right now, I am yelling at my child. It's the first time. Am I yelling, or do I yell? I'm yelling. Right? What happens if it happens again?
Yeah.
A few days later. Okay. Depends on how many times the person watching, observing, could be the kid, could be the spouse, feels it needs to be convinced that you are that type of person, right? It's very subjective. It's like the theory of relativity for people. So if I see a guy, and generally he's really calm and easygoing, I got a roommate, every once in a while something really ticks him off, do I say, he is an angry kind of person all the time? Or whatever, he's got his limits. I would say he's basically okay, he's got his limits, right? It depends on your spouse's perception. But at some point, and the only way to know at what point that is to know your wife, at some point, after yelling once, I'm yelling twice, I'm yelling three times, right? Then she says, he yells. And by the way, it's actually a well-known phenomenon in spouse abuse, when husbands should lonely not beat their wives, that the first time it happens, and then the sequence is oftentimes that the wife doesn't leave, right? So part of that dynamic is that the first time it happens, she's shocked. And it doesn't fit her perception of who she thought she married, so she assumes that he hit me. Not that he hits, I'm just putting it in the past tense, but if it's going on right now, it would be, he is hitting me. But not that he hits. Right? And some people have the ability to always click back to the first time and say, no, this is an exception. This can't be, this is an exception. So they're always kind of stuck in that in that falsehood that they built for themselves that he is hitting me. When in reality, if you take the points and you go like this, and you link them together, you go, oh, this guy lies. This guy hits. Right? And we don't do that for ourselves. So when somebody says, how you doing with Minyan? And by the way, this is an amazing thing. It's really true. You could take a guy, you could sit across from a guy, and you've got like the attendance in front of you, right? And he's made Minyan like 4 times the last month, right? And you're like, I want to talk to you about your Minyan attendance. It hasn't been so good. And he's like, what do you mean? I go to Minyan, right? Right? Or, maybe you catch him right after Minyan. Well, Al, good to see you at Minyan today. I know usually you don't make it. What do you mean? I go to Minyan. So he thinks that the fact that he is going to Minyan right now is he is going to Minyan. But when you link the things together, at 27 out of 30 times, he didn't go to Minyan, so he is not a Minyan goer. Right? He does not go to Minyan. So we do the same thing with ourselves. We lose our temper. I think for many of us, it's around the area of anger. And in a relationship, that comes up a lot. So we don't view ourselves as being angry people or raising our voices or taking cheap shots. We're not that kind of person. But yeah, in the middle of the fight, it happened. Okay. But, you've been married now for X number of months, years, and it's happened here, it's happened there, it's happened there, it's happened there. So do you yell at your wife? Right? Or are you yelling right now? And at some point, you have to face the fact that there's something to work on. Right? So what we tend to do, and what I'm going to close this little section right now with a recommendation, is instead of us viewing the other person as kind of always being like that, that they're always this way, right? And viewing ourselves as, well, this is just an exception. This is not who I really am. Learn to flip it around, right? So when you view, I'm not sure why I keep going with this topic of yelling, but it's better than hitting, right? Lying. When it comes to one's wife, right? Don't view your wife as, oh, she yells. There she goes. She's yelling. She yells. View it as she is yelling right now. She is yelling. Oh, well, why is she yelling? She's upset about something, right? But you won't ask that. If you say she yells, are you going to try and figure out why she's yelling? Why not? It's our fault. She always yells. She's defective. She has a personality like that, right? She's always angry. She always yells. He always lies. So one of the great challenges in marriage, and in many ways it's a real key to commitment, is, as my wife would say, to pull yourself up out of the present of I am yelling, and look at the big picture of the relationship. Say, okay, well, what do I do on the grand scheme? Am I a yeller? Do I yell? Am I angry? Am I often angry? Whereas with your wife, you want to do the opposite, and you want to look at her as right now she is angry. Right, right now she is yelling. Right now she is. She's hitting me. I don't know, whatever it might be. Right? But not to say she yells.
Then everything you do is a problem.
What's
every,
that?
Every some single thing, something happens, you're a flawed person. You have an issue.
Okay, good. Right. You're right.
The truth is
going to be somewhere in between the two. And you have to be, what I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to take a person who thinks he's always okay and say, wait a minute, connect the dots. Maybe you got something to work on. Because how is your wife viewing you? You're right. You have people who will guilt themselves into paralysis, and they'll haul off, they'll hit their kid once, and they go, oh my God, I should call social services on myself. I hit my kid, it's my first child, and he's 2.5, and I spanked him, and wear the handcuffs, and wait a minute, how many times did it happen? He called the police, come arrest me. They're like, what happened? I hit my kid. Are you hitting him right now? No, it was a few minutes ago. Okay. Well, do you hit your kid regularly? No, I just did it that one time. Like, oh, we'll call us back when it gets to like 10 or 12. We got a lot of calls today. We don't have time. It was less than 10 hits, right? So you're right. You can go the other extreme. You can go the other extreme. You have to be careful. I'm not trying to teach yourself to ruin your life with guilt. What I'm trying to do is loosen up our perspective a little bit, not to be frozen in the present. Because what happens that destroys, like erodes commitment, is when she thinks that he lies. Right? So he's a liar. Or vice versa. And he thinks he's okay, because, yeah, I'm lying, but you know, it's a one-time thing. So it's important to see the truth. And to see things not only stuck in the simple, in the moment right now, but to see it on the longer scale, of time. Okay, that's one idea I want to share with regard to commitment and relationships to help you see things past, present, and future. And it sounds like a linguistic trick, I know, but you can actually do it to yourself. I mean, in theory, if you got somebody here, like a roommate, who can catch you while you are yelling and say, are you yelling or do you yell? It will be amazing. You'll be like, right, no, I hit, right? I don't yell. I am hitting, right? But the truth is, if you could do it to yourself, you would stop. And you say, wait a minute, that's not who I want to be. That's not in accordance with my values to be a yeller, right? To be angry, to hit. By the way, there are a couple things that for most people, if you do them once, there's two things that if you do them once, most people will think that you are that way always. If you yell, all right, whatever, you have to yell three times, five times, whatever. You have to, if you do one of two things, then once you've done it once, most people will view that way always. Unless you can really convince them otherwise through a lot of consistency. What do you think those two things are? They're connected, by the way.
Cheating.
Okay. Murder. Well, I wasn't. Yeah. Right, okay. My wife is like, is he murdering or is he or is he a murderer?
If you murder someone one time. Right.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. The truth is, no, he's right. 100%. No, you're 100% right. What I meant more in the context of marriage is if he cheats on his wife once, he will think, you know, in his mind, like, this is terrible, I'm cheating on my wife. When she finds out, she'll think he cheats. And that's just a more extreme version of this, because they're both an issue of trust. And once that red line has been broken, it's very hard to get the trust back. It's very hard, even once, for most people. Okay.
So, even though it's more of an extreme, how come when he cheats once, he's a cheater, and the last one, he just lied once?
No, I'm saying they're both. They're the same.
Oh, okay.
If a guy yells, right, so he is yelling. He's upset. Most people are like, he's yelling. I mean, obviously, it happens every other day. The guy's always yelling, so he yells on an ongoing way. And then there's a problem. But you need to repeat it a number of times before it really sinks in. But once you've been lied to once, do you trust that person? They have to really make up for it. All right, you have to see them not lie for a long period of time.
What happens once he is a
liar? Lying, right? In most people's eyes, lying and cheating in the wife's eyes, that's it. He lies and he cheats, and it's going to be very hard.
It's not.
Huh?
For yelling, it's different.
For basically everything else, it would be. I mean, obviously, you know.
Now, any felony, I figure, a robber, you have to anything.
Yeah. And the truth is probably for hitting, for most people. I'm not so sure about that, because a lot of times in abuse, they'll view it as an extreme form of yelling. And they won't think, oh, he's crossed a red line, and he could, in theory, hit again. Most women won't. I don't know, most. I don't know here. I don't believe that most women would leave their husbands because they got hit once. Right? Because they think he is hitting. It was a one-time thing. Okay. commitment. Part two. I want to talk about past relationships. So there's a Gemara that says that Hashem gave the world a great gift. It's called Shichacha, the ability to forget. The ability to forget. And the Gemara says that forgetfulness sinks in, even with the most extreme cases, after 12 months. Obviously, there's exceptions. But there's an idea that given enough time, even things that are very difficult will soften with age. And I think we all tend, when we look back at past experiences, whether the relationships, jobs that we held, summer camp, experiences, we tend to remember what? We tend to remember the good parts. We don't forget that the bad parts ever existed, but we don't usually focus on them. We kind of wear rose-colored glasses when we look at the past, right? And one of the areas that we do that with is relationships. If anybody's ever had a girlfriend, and it's not just true for boyfriend and girlfriend, but since that's the topic here, if anyone's ever had a girlfriend and has broken up, and of course, you know, if you're shot or better, assuming that's what happened, but I don't know. I should make assumptions. No. Actually, I had a friend who was Shana Bet, and he got married to the girl that he was going out with Shana Bet, and came at Rosh Hashiva. He did great, but that's not for public consumption. That's, you know, individual case. The point is that when a person has a previous relationship, as time goes by, more and more, what does he remember from that relationship? The good parts, the things that brought him into the relationship for the first time, in the first place. The high points, the fun stuff, right? The thrill, the excitement, the interest, whatever the original attraction was. Were there problems? Well, obviously the relationship didn't last, so something caused the relationship to end. But what people tend to remember are the good things. Okay, guy's married. Let's shoot forward in time. Guy's been married, I don't know, 6 months, 3 years, 8 years, doesn't matter. And lo and behold, there's challenges, there's friction, there's problems, there's yelling, there's murder and hitting. You know? there's challenges, right? There's difficult times, right? As will arise in any relationship. And if they happen once, or you know, they get resolved in 20 minutes, okay, whatever. But a lot of times you can get in a rut, and it takes time to get out of that negative place. Okay, very common. What happens at that moment when you're in the middle of a prolonged negative spell, which is almost unavoidable in any real relationship that's going to go on for years? It happens with parents and kids, happens with employer-employee, it happens with friends, right? It certainly happens with husband and wife. You're going to get stuck in a rut where there's a negative peer experience, and there's a lot of negativity. At that moment, you start to compare. And what a person compares to is his previous relationships, because that's what he has with what to compare. What does he remember from his previous relationships? Yeah, he doesn't remember the reason they broke up, but maybe a little bit, but it doesn't have the same emotional impact. Right now, the negativity, the emotional impact in his life is the fight he's having, his ongoing fight he's having with his wife. And when he thinks back to a relationship he had when he was in 10th grade, or when he was in college, or whatever it was, or when he was dating, and he starts to remember all the good things, well, what does that do to his willingness to work on the relationship and make it work? It erodes it, right? It poisons it. In other words, it undermines commitment. Commitment is the ability to go ahead and know that you're in it for the long term, and therefore you have to look at the positive to make it work. And past relationships are almost always going to make give you a hurdle that's very hard to get over. It's very hard to get over. So what's the solution? What am I recommending? And this is the second element of commitment. I'm actually recommending two things. Can you guess either one? Yeah. Yeah. Now, obviously, for many of us, we can't change the past, and that's not possible. And maybe I'm preaching to the choir here, and I should really speak into Sean off, but you know, they would have eaten the food 10 minutes ago and left, so that's God bless them. But the reality is, one of the reasons I thought of this is because I just had a conversation with an alum. Obviously, we'll not name any names. He was telling me about his relationships while he was at college. And he had learned certain things from the relationships, you know, about what he was looking for and just trying to figure out what went wrong here. Okay, fine. But the truth is, I don't think he learned that much. It's a little bit hard, maybe more with time, or learn more. But the problem is that the farther he gets away from those relationships, that gives him kind of a better perspective on what happened, he tends to forget the negative. So what will happen is that someday he'll get married, and he'll remember that girl who's frozen at the age of, I don't know, 20, 21, whatever, I don't know the age of the women that he dated in college. And his wife, who's now, I don't know, 30 or 37 or whatever she is, 25, and he's having problems right now. That's a real relationship. He's going to hold up in his mind a picture of a relationship he had when he was 20, 21, where things were, it was pretty good. Because he's not going to remember the negative parts. Obviously, he can remember them, but he doesn't remember them in like, they don't have an oomph to him. They don't pull him down. They're not negative in his perspective. Because he's got distance from it. And that will undermine a person's commitment to where he is right now. It's the famous, the grass is always greener, right? But kind of in hindsight. Kind of in hindsight. So what's the Gemara mean? That what does the Gemara mean that forgetfulness is a shichacha, is a blessing? Sounds like the way we've set it up, it's a big curse. Or it's going to ruin your marriage, right? No, so you have to use it to your advantage. How do you use it to your advantage? If God brought this thing, shichacha, into the world to help us so we don't mourn for the rest of our lives, we can stop mourning after 12 months. How can we use it in marriage to help us move ahead and not be dragged back by our previous relationships? Yeah.
Forget what your spouse did aside.
Right, right. Very much connected to what we said before. Right? What were we going to say?
I was going to say, forget the fights.
Forget the fights. Forget, focus on the good times. Focus on the good times. I'll just mention something else my wife mentioned, which was I thought was great. She read a book about home management. Home management, like home finance. Yeah, no, good. And in this book, it was all sorts of advice how to manage your family, etc., so you don't go over budget. And he had a last chapter. The last chapter of this book was Money Can Buy You Happiness. And what did he mean, money can buy you happiness? So he said something I thought was very, very online. He said that when you spend money on objects, so there, your excitement or your happiness that you get from that object declines over time. It's always true. When you spend money on memories, because of this element, he doesn't know the Gemara, but he recognized the fact that over time you remember the good parts. Because over time you will forget the bad parts and remember the good parts, that investing in memories will only increase your enjoyment over time. So if you can spend money on a vacation with your wife or your kids, or you can just buy them a lot of gifts, what's the long-term investment in happiness? Yeah, 100%. So what a couple has to do is, before they get married, before they're a couple, don't create relationships that you're going to have to fight not to compare to. All right, what's done is done, high school's over. But until a person's ready to get married, relationships are only going to prove to be an obstacle in most cases to the future marriage. Once the couple's together, then what they have to do is to begin to create positive memories and focus, even when they're in a negative rut, focus on the good times. Don't let those things be forgotten, right? And when it comes to other relationships, remember the bad things. Why did she drop me? Why did she dump me? Why did I dump her? Why did we mutually break up? Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. That wasn't so. And that will put things in perspective. All right, one last quick idea, and then we'll take some questions. And this is really, this is almost like a survey. I'm going to throw this out there. And you guys have to do it on your own time, in your own brain. All right? It's the commitment survey. It's very simple. It's got four questions. And the great thing is the four questions is really just four versions of the same question. And the survey, the purpose of the survey is to get you to figure out if you have an issue with commitment. Because the fact is, I think today, once again, it has become a widespread problem of people committing. And men in general, historically we know, are a little more commitment challenged, commitment handicapped than women are. And therefore, I'd like for you to take the time to ask yourself the following four questions. Have I ever been in a job experience that had problems, right? And I decided to either quit or not go back to that job? Now, obviously, sometimes you should quit a bad job, right? And sometimes you should not go back to a job if it's maybe you got a better job, right? But it's worthwhile to ponder, well, why didn't I take that summer job up again? I could have. It was offered to me. Or why did I quit? Did the tough get going? What is it? When the going got help me out, guys. It's been a while. When the going got tough, right? Did I get going? Did I leave? Okay, how about roommates? Did I ever have problems with roommates? And I either did a room switch. I should get Rav Mo in here, right? Did I ever do a room switch? Or did I just decide not to room with that person again? I switched, you know, oh, that was a nice year. Sayonara, I'm going to find new roommates. Now, obviously, sometimes you got to switch rooms, right? But you have to, you can take the time to ponder that maybe instead of switching the roommate and keeping your problem, you could switch your problem, get rid of the problem, and keep your roommate. How about with a project? Ever start a project and not finish it? Similar, right? But a little bit different. You ever start a project and not see it through to its end? And there could be a lot of reasons for that. When you ask the question, you'll probably find out that there was a few reasons. But I wouldn't be surprised if you began the project, if you started a project because you had to, right? You were forced to do it. All right, I'm not really talking about that. A project that you had some kind of decision, or the truth is, you know, maybe you were pushed into a little bit, you had to school, whatever, and at some point you bowed out. You just stepped out and didn't take the responsibility. You didn't finish. Something to think about. And the last one, of course, are relationships. Friends or otherwise. Did you ever have a friendship that you simply let drop, let decay, or end it right out because there were fights? Right? And now sometimes that might be the best thing to do, would just be to say, hey, we're killing each other, why bother? But maybe what we did is we switched the friend and we kept our problem. And all of those things are things to ponder when you go ahead and make that big decision line. Am I going to have the sticking power, the commitment to see it through to its end? And when a person feels that the good outweighs the bad, he focuses on the good, he puts the bad in the past. When he sees the bad as a one-time thing, but the person in their essence on an ongoing way are the good values, then he has the strength to see something through to its end and to stay in a committed and loving relationship. All right, we literally have just a few minutes left, like 2-3 minutes. Does that have any, take one or two questions? Any questions? Any more food? You want to take one? This is the last chance for food. We got like 2 minutes left. All right. Yeah.
The desire to finish things once you start something, that's commitment related.
It's more the desire to jump ship when there are challenges that rise up. In other words, a person who begins something, begins a Gemara, he begins a project, whatever. So the general assumption, he begins it because he wants to finish it. He wants to do it, right? Now maybe he bit off more than he can chew. Or maybe he didn't realize he didn't have enough time. There's a lot of things that are beyond your control you just didn't realize. And that might be I stopped doing that because it just became impossible. But if a person looks carefully, he might see a pattern that he tends to take things on, and he simply, when it gets difficult and maybe the reward is out there in the future and it's not right now, or it's taking him longer, more effort than he thought, he drops it and moves on. That's a red flag. That's something to consider and think about before you make the ultimate commitment. Yeah.
What do you think specifically lying and cheating are the two?
Because they're trust-oriented. Which hitting is also, by the way, abuse is. But it's a certain amount of trust. Like a person can yell at somebody, you still trust them. But once there's been a lie that's been made, so you never know, it's the foundation of your relationship, right? You never know when they say something ever again what to do with what they said. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So it's one thing when they say what they mean, but they're yelling at you. So you don't like the fact, but they mean it. Okay, at least they mean it. They're not lying. Right? So they're being straightforward. They have integrity, right? Okay, so let's work on it. But once they lie, they're duplicit. They're a lying person. You never know again what to do with what they've said. Mm-hmm. And once they've cheated, it's basically an exaggerated form of lying, of breaking trust, right? And the truth is, whoever you said stealing, right, would be a similar thing. It's also like a personal invasion of basic trust. Stealing is a form of lying, basically, right behind your back. Obviously, if your spouse mugs you out in the open, that's also a problem. Right. Okay, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. I'll leave you to do your bracha achronas, whatever. The food, once again, and the impetus for the shiur was sponsored by the Cohen family, so you can all enjoy, take it with you, and I bless you all in your future relationships, both those before marriage and especially marriage itself. Yes, sir.